missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. As obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to anything I can. Well,
do it then. Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome back into the football show on this Thursday evening's Off the Ball. Damien Delaney is here with myself, Will O'Callaghan, between now and 10 o'clock. We're keeping an eye on Atletico Madrid against RB Leipzig in the Champions League quarterfinals. And Damien, it might be a night for the coffee. You could well be here for extra time and penalties in this
one. I don't know. I fancy Atletico just to bundle one in, Costa or a set piece or something. And I mean, it'll be going exactly as they hoped, exactly as they planned, and they'll back themselves to nick one in the second half. I think Leipzig, how long they let it go with no second leg to come at home. You know, if this was an away tie, they might say, no problem, we'll get it back to Germany or whatever. So how long they let it go before they start actually throwing some bodies on, because they know that Atletico is going to grind them down and just, you know. So they might have to change something, or they will have to change something. I can't imagine them guys being happy with going to extra time and penalties. And when the changes start happening, the game might open up a little bit. So as we stand, I think Atletico will be the happier because they've done exactly what they wanted to do, and Leipzig probably haven't been able to implement any of the things they wanted to do.
Atletico Madrid aren't the easiest on the eye. They're not the most attacking team. But you have to give them credit.
This
decade under Diego Simeone, even though the kind of players change in the system and we see João Félix potentially coming on for them, their 100 million signing from last summer, they still play to the style that Diego Simeone sets them out to do.
I have a huge amount of respect for them. I remember doing the shows against Liverpool here and everyone was getting irate, and I think even some of the other guys on TV were like criticising. I think Souness had a go at them at one point about, you know, they're terrible and all that. And I was thinking, well, hang on a second, like, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and they've chosen to do it this way. So they do it extremely well, and they deserve maximum respect for the way they go about it. And whether it's easy on the eye or not, I still think there's a beauty in what they do. And I love watching them defend, and I love watching the positions midfielders take up, the spaces they deny you, the spaces they let you have, and how quickly they can counter-attack. And Diego Costa is a perfect foil for a team that wants to play on a counter-attack. So, look, there's beauty in what they do. You just have to be a purist, I suppose, is what people would say.
Yeah, but look, I mean, the thing is, look, it's winning football. 7 years ago, they broke up Barcelona and Real Madrid and the great teams they had winning La Liga titles. That was a huge achievement in and of itself. They got to a couple of Champions League finals that were probably hard done by, in the one particularly against Madrid.
Yep.
And they're back in Lisbon tonight again. And they also won a couple of Europa Leagues during that period, all while generally they sell their best striker every couple of seasons. They have to rejig things. And Simeone keeps them at this elite level inside Europe.
Yeah, he has complete control at football club, and he's the highest paid manager in the world as well, an astronomical contract. So he has a system, and they sign players for that system. They don't ever go and sign, you know, an odd one or, you know, somebody kind of go, how is he going to fit in that system? You know, like we were talking before about Griezmann going into Barcelona, you think, how is he going to fit in that? Or what's his role going to be? You know, everybody signed for a specific reason, to play a specific position, has a specific set of specific skill set, I suppose, for it. And he doesn't ever deviate from that. And that's why it's as he makes it look as easy as what he does, because he just keeps the thing rolling, you know.
Well, look, you're a member of the Defender Union, so you can give us a bit of an insight into this. Like, Atletico are just so wonderfully set up in terms of, they'll always have that kind of shielding player. It's Saúl Núñez tonight who's playing just in front of the back four. Mm. The back four are expected to play in a solid way. They're expected to cut down space. I would imagine as a defender, there's strikers take enjoyment out of goals. Goalkeepers take enjoyment out of saves. But I'm sure if you're a defender and you can deny space to the opposition, that must be extremely enjoyable to play in that.
Exactly. And the reason they're able to do it is because the back four drop so deep that deny space in behind you. Because one thing a lot of teams want to do, and a lot of top teams want to do, is they want to get in behind you. Not with long balls, but with balls slid down the side, you know, straight balls, diagonal runs, or diagonal runs and, you know, diagonal balls and straight runs. So they want to get in behind you, and then that will mess up back four. Centre-backs end up getting dragged out towards the corner flag, midfield players are filling in, and once that happens, then that you're done for, because they recycle the ball, and now we've got centre-backs out of position, midfield players are playing centre-back, full-backs kind of don't know where they're supposed to be. But they'd never do that. They very, very, very rarely get out of shape, you know. Centre-back deny space behind them, the full-back deny space behind them, and then the midfield players deny the space in front of the back four, and then they have a player up the top of the pitch in Diego Costa, who can occupy a back four on his own and will chase a crisp back on a windy day, because that's the type of guy that he is. And he's a great release for them. But on top of that, I think the thing that's most aesthetically pleasing about Atletico is how they go from that low block into an attacking kind of formation. They never overcommit bodies on the counter-attack. They never ever let midfield players go in the hope that Costa is going to get hold of it. They wait till he actually gets hold of it, and when he's then they wait another second, they think he's definitely got hold of it, and then the midfield players might go. They very, very rarely kind of get go from a counter-attack and then get countered themselves, you know what I mean? It's almost countering a counter-attack. They'll never do that. They'll never give that type of space. So when they go on the break, they're very, very good. They're very, very kind of economical or efficient with what they do. And they have got midfielders who are technically able to handle the ball on the break, and they won't turn it over that easily.
And you know, they can transition when they need to. You go back to that game against Liverpool over 4 months ago now. They found themselves behind in that tie when the goal comes in from Firmino, and they know they have to score a couple of times to ensure that they go through. They brought on Morata, they changed the system a little bit. Now, they got a bit lucky, the two Llorente goals were mistakes by the Liverpool keeper on the night. But at the same time, Atletico Madrid were able to come out of their shell and play well with the football when they had to.
I think that's down to the manager. That's his enthusiasm, that's his kind of stubborn nature. He looks like a tough guy, he looks like a guy that will just not accept losing. And I've always said I'm a big believer that, you know, football teams take on the personalities of the managers. Kind of just, it just happens all the time when you look at managers, teams just behave like them, you know, like Liverpool's Klopp and Pep Guardiola, and you know, all the way down through it, it just happens, because when you listen to a manager talk, it just rubs off on the players, and the team takes on that identity. And he looks like a guy who just is just relentless in what he does, and if they need a win, he'll throw on attackers, and everybody just keeps going.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with João Felix, who was warming up at halftime but hasn't come on just yet. Alvaro Morata, also an option for the bench, their top scorer at Atletico this season. They are without Thomas Partey, the target for Arsenal for their midfield potentially. He has a bit of a knock and was unable to play last night, so it meant a bit of a reshuffle, but Atletico still playing in the same normal style. RB Leipzig in the first half had just one shot on target, and when you saw the space they got against Tottenham, they're being denied that against Atletico in Lisbon so far. We're 5 minutes now into the second half. We'll keep an eye on that in the background. Damien, you read this interview with Mesut Ozil, which was in the Athletic.
Yeah.
I thought, look, there's some very interesting bits and pieces in it. I don't think it seems he's got a very strong relationship with Mikel Arteta. And he sent out a fairly clear sign to Arsenal that it's like, look, I'm not going to leave this club easily. And chances are you've got me on your hands until next year.
But I think this interview was brilliantly timed from his point of view, because I think moves are afoot in Arsenal. They're trying to move him out, maybe to the MLS or to China or to the Middle East or somewhere. And Arsenal trying to do it as economically kind of viable as they can, in so far as they want to get someone to take a fast chunk of his wages. They won't want to have to pay him up a certain amount of money, and I'm pretty sure that Arsenal have been doing this behind the scenes that we wouldn't have seen. And Ozil just come out and publicly said, absolutely no chance. If you guys even think of getting rid of me, I'll leave on my terms, which is basically saying, give me all my money and then I will leave. Arsenal aren't going to do that. But it's a difficult situation for Arteta, you know, because it's just like I'm going as far as to say it's a millstone around their neck, but he's just a constant talking point, you know, his constant negative talking point at that, you know. So between Mesut Ozil and that Arsenal fan TV, you know, the club just need to cut both of those loose.
Do you watch much Arsenal fan TV?
I don't, but you can't help but see it, you know, it pops up all the time, you know. I would go full Kim Jong-un on them fellas and just like get them out of the football club, you know. The negative, or the negativity, the level of negativity they bring on it, you know. I mean, they're two guys that make a living off Arsenal being useless, and they just perpetuate that. They need Arsenal to be useless because they won't get paid if Arsenal are good. And they just kind of...
We got a goal against the run of play, and it's gone for Leipzig. You said this is exactly what we wanted to see.
Absolutely,
David.
Yeah. I mean, now you might see João Felix come on. Here he's just calling him. Pretty much, he's just calling him on the spot. So... he probably was hoping to bring on João Felix at 0-0 at 70 minutes, but now he's thinking, okay, we're 30 minutes or 35 minutes away from getting knocked out. It's a well-worked goal from Leipzig. Just what I was saying, they kind of get down the sides of them.
They're going to be very disappointed. Let it go.
Hey, listen, you know what? You will be disappointed. I don't think there's a lot you can do there. A ball's got played down the side, it's crossed in, and it's just landed on a guy's head in between bodies. But look at how close together all those Atletico players are. It's just a perfect ball, perfect header. It's a decent goal, can't do much about it, but now we need to see a shift in gears from Atletico, and hopefully the game will open up, which is, leaves a possibility for Leipzig getting a second, or Atletico getting back in this. But it's just what the game needed, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we're watching this. It's kind of surreal when you see the Leipzig substitutes who are all in their masks, who are running out to celebrate that goal. But really well worked down the left-hand side. And it is a Spaniard who has scored against Atletico Madrid in Dani Olmo, who just came in perfectly around the penalty spot to head that cross in. So RB Leipzig lead by 1-0 in Lisbon, 6 minutes into the second half. In terms of Mesut Ozil, just to kind of pick up that point again, Damien, you were saying about kind of the relationship between Mikel Arteta and Ozil. It comes fairly clear in terms of what he said too, that he feels that after lockdown he was frozen out, he got no chance to actually play, and as a result he can't be blamed for not being involved in the squad now.
Okay, from the outside I can see clearly what's going on here. Mikel Arteta is of the Pep Guardiola school, the Jurgen Klopp school. These guys are relentless in what they do, insofar as training on a Monday morning or playing on a Saturday or a recovery session, everything is done at full throttle and everybody takes part in it. And I know that from speaking to people that have been with Klopp and been with Pep. They're intense, their level of intensity and their level of concentration is through the roof every day, and they expect that out of all their players. They won't carry any passengers. It's a 25-man squad, 25 people show up motivated every day, and they just get that environment going. If somebody's not pulling their weight by even 1%, that player gets cut. Because if one player isn't pulling his weight, no matter how good he is, it gives the manager a huge dilemma. Because if you're cracking the whip with the other 24, and one guy's not doing it,
it has to be an example to all.
Somebody's going to put their hand up and say, well, hang on a minute, Mesut didn't do that last week. And then the manager can't come back and say, oh, well, Mesut's our best player. Well, there's going to be a lot of kind of, you know, people getting upset with that, players in the change room going, hang on a minute, I did the same thing last week and I got absolutely buried, and Mesut's doing it this time, or right? So they set a standard and everybody lives up to it. If you want to live up to it, you're out the side door. Mesut Ozil is a fantastic football player. I genuinely believe that. As a football player, he is brilliant at what he does. You know, his weight of his pass, his assists, his movement, his everything is brilliant. Now, we've not seen the last 2 years, but he's one of the best that I've ever played against. I mean, he really was, for that period of time at Arsenal, I used to love watching him. And then when I was playing against him, there was a certain amount of admiration. It's just like his movement.
Was he really hard to defend against?
He was brilliant.
He picks up positions all over the field.
He does, and he picks up and he asks questions of his positioning and do you want to go tight? You don't want to go tight. And he glides around the pitch and he's super intelligent and he has a lot. But he's a bit of a free spirit, I'd say, insofar as, you know, Wenger would tolerate it, you know, but Wenger never set a bar for anybody, you know. Wenger's kind of motto was a happy player is a good player. So if Mesut wants to be late, or Mesut doesn't want to do gym work, or doesn't want to rehab properly, or wants to go back to Germany, he can go back to Germany, there's no problem. Just keep him happy and he'll be a good player. Klopp, Guardiola, Arteta is definitely cut from that cloth as well, won't tolerate it. So I'm pretty sure that day one he'd have had Mesut in and said, Mesut, you need to change your ways, because I can't be seen to give you special treatment than the other 24. Mesut's gone, okay, I'm going to join in. But he's not in his makeup, it's not in his nature to do that. Mesut Ozil is the type of guy, if you push him and you keep pushing him and pushing him and pushing him, he won't function. He needs to be just have the strings clipped and say, Mesut, go and enjoy yourself, you know.
Because I remember when he played under Jose Mourinho with Real Madrid, Jose probably got his best season out of him when Madrid beat Pep Guardiola's Barcelona to the league, and Mesut Ozil had this fantastic season where he laid loads of goals on for Higuain and for Cristiano Ronaldo, and he was working really hard inside that Jose Mourinho team. Sometimes it maybe takes a certain type of manager to actually get the best out of those players. Mourinho obviously knew how to man-manage him.
But if he, yeah, exactly. And Jose is an old-fashioned man-manager. But if you let Mesut kind of do his own thing, you will get a lot back from him. But Arteta doesn't leave anything to chance. Klopp and Guardiola, these types of managers don't leave anything to chance. Simeone the same. This is how we do things. This is how it has to be done. Either do it like this or you won't be involved. And Mesut probably just went the other way. Now he thinks that he's coming in, you know, saying Arsenal gave me this contract because I'm Mesut Ozil and I want to do Mesut Ozil things. And Arteta's come in and kind of laid down the law, and now it almost has become a battle of wills where Arteta can't flinch. You know, he cannot be seen to bring Mesut back in. But at the minute, he's really unhappy because he's not been allowed to live the life that he wants to live or behave in a certain way. Not in a negative way, it's just the free spirit type character that he is. You know, you need, he's like a little flame that you just need to fan, you know what I mean, and get him going, that type of thing. But Arteta won't be like that. He will come in every day and there will be a laptop at the side of the pitch and every player has to hit a certain number, a certain time, and training's finished because it's done in the numbers. It'll be that type of, you know, level of intensity that he'll expect. And Mesut might just come in one day and he looks like the type of player that he'd walk out and he wouldn't even tie his boots up on a Tuesday morning.
To be fair, you can understand where Arteta's coming from, because he's got these exciting young players like Saka and Kedia, and he wants to make sure these guys buy into a certain standard.
Exactly. So that's the point with that. And now they're caught in a standoff. But Arsenal need to make a decision now, quickly, and very, very quickly. Cut him loose. And it might cost you a lot of money, but if you want to move forward, you've got to cut him loose, because he's not going to change his ways and Arteta's not going to flinch.
And he's going to cost a lot of money if he stays in the wages anyway.
Exactly. So you might as well go, do you know what, for the sake of the future of the club, let's just cut him loose, man. Or let's just, I don't know, offload him and minimise our losses insofar as, even if we get X amount of money through the door for him to go to China, let's just take that and just put it over there in the corner, pretend it never happened, because it's terrible. And I go for the same with that Arsenal fan TV. It needs to go. And I think Arsenal need to get rid of those two things if they want to have a chance of moving forward, because at the minute, the two of them are like two breeze blocks hanging off each arm, you know?
Guendouzi and Ozil are currently frozen out at Arsenal. They didn't even get to go to the FA Cup final to watch the trophy being raised. Did you ever find yourself during your career being frozen out by a manager like that?
Yeah, I had it, before, yeah. I mean, you know, Guendouzi's got frozen out because he's
talked like a big time charity.
Look, he's a young boy and he's obviously got opinions. The world will teach him pretty quickly that he can't behave like that. I'm pretty sure that I would like to think there's characters in the Arsenal changing room, because what he did against Brighton wouldn't have been a one off. Do you know what I mean? He wouldn't have just come out and started saying these things. That's been in his character since he was 12 years of age. He's a trash talker and sometimes he probably takes it too far, and that's fine. But if you've got a good leadership group in the Arsenal changing room who he respects, I'm not sure he respects anybody, because he looks like the type of guy that just does what he wants, but he'll learn very, very quickly, because he's going to be moved on from a lot of teams, no matter how good he is. And that goes back to my Arteta point. With Ozil, it's the same thing. He would have sat down and often says, we don't do that as a football club, okay? So you change your ways or you won't be involved, because we don't talk like that. We respect their opponents. We have utmost respect for everybody in this building and everyone we come up against. So if I hear any more chat that you're doing that type of carry on, you will not be at this football club. Take it as a warning, take it as whatever you want, just take it.
Is that we need the senior players, though?
Absolutely.
Because I'm sure the Arsenal of 15 years ago, that Invincibles team, good luck doing that with the likes of Tony Adams and Ray Parler and these type of personalities of the era.
You'd have woke up in a washing machine, you know? I mean, that's what would have actually happened, you know? Or the guy would have got bullied so bad, just to say that, like, or not bullied, but ostracised from the group so bad to the point of, like, you know what I mean? You are on the outside, and you change your ways, or you will never be back in this changing room again, you know? And that's what senior players are to do. Obviously, try and talk to the guy, but if he can't be spoken to, then you need to take drastic measures. And then if he still doesn't want to listen, well, then he needs to be moved on. And it looks like Arteta's come to the point where they have spoken to him. Maybe senior players have spoken to him. I don't know who the big characters in the Arsenal changing room are, but maybe people have spoken to him. Maybe people have gone after him in training, made his life difficult, but he doesn't want to change. And that's fine. You move him on as well. So you can't have negativity around your group like that. You need to set the bar that high for everybody, not just Ozil or Guendouzi.
Did you ever fall foul of a man?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, I got frozen out. Yeah, happened before. Yeah.
Where was that?
I was at Crystal Palace with Frank de Boer. Had a disagreement with him, and I was training with the under 23s.
When you end up having to do that, do you get frustrated or do you try and be a proper professional? What way does it go?
Listen, I remember the first day that I was like, came in and, like, you know, the kit man came in and my gear was in my locker, and I was like, all right, and he went, and Kit Man was like half afraid to tell me. He's like, yeah,
you're with the kids
you're
today.
You're with the 23s today. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake. And the 23s training ground was like up the road. It was like a kilometre up the road. It was in a different building. So I'm like, all right, where are my boots? And he goes, oh, they're already up there. So they basically moved all my stuff up. So I kind of been frozen out.
Fairly clear there's no way back when you're...
Oh, absolutely, 100%, you know what I mean? But I knew the day before when whatever happened, that, like, it was just a case of, like, I knew full well. I thought, will I even bother going to the first team training ground, or will I just carry on into the 23s? So I knew that was what was going to happen, and that was okay, that was fine. But there's no way back from that, you know? There's no amount, because it's gone so far. But then, you know... You know, and that's okay, because the manager's made his decision that, like, he doesn't want me around the first team, no problem. And then you know, obviously I'm going up to the 23s. I remember walking on the training pitch for the first time in Richard Shaw, who played for Palace. Great fella.
I remember the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember walking on into the training ground and Shawzy's like looking at me going, oh no, because I think he'd know.
The assumption is you're going to be a problem because you're going to come
right,
in.
Right, and then he's like looking at me and I'm just like, Rich, stop me there. There'll be no problem. I'll train properly. And because he's thinking, I got my under 23s here and I have a good thing going. I don't need like you coming in here and just wrecking my sessions, you know, which I could quite easily do. But my argument wasn't with Richard Shaw on the 23s. Mine was with, you know, the manager. So I said to Rich, look, there'll be no problem there, man. I'm happy to come in and help and I'll set a good example for the young kids and I'll train well and I'll do everything that you asked me to do and you won't have one problem with me. And he was almost like going, oh, thank God. Because I didn't really want to have a fight with you or argue with you or I didn't want to have to deal with your you know, if you had a bad attitude over here, I didn't want to really have to deal with that. So, but
does anyone at the club try and mediate that point of view? Or is you're gone?
Yeah, well, it was kind of a bow. I knew like that I was going to be gone as the thing was happening. I was putting my cards on the table, you know, so that there was a difference of opinion. So I knew straight away, when you follow up with your manager, there's only going to be one winner, right? So I was aware that was going to happen. As I said, I was driving to training that day and I was thinking, well, I even bother going because I know there's no way I'm going to be with the first team. So, but luckily, well, not luckily, but, you know.
He lost
the job not long after that and Roy Hodgson came in. And then, like, I remember the night before Roy Hodgson got the job and driving to training in the morning and the kit man phoned me and he was like, mate, you come back to the first team training ground. honestly, I needed to pull over.
But Roy Hodgson comes in because I don't know. Is Roy aware?
Yeah.
And he still welcomes you back.
Well, see, this is the thing. On my first day with him, like when I was driving to train, the kit man phoned me, Danny, and he says, listen, mate, you're back in the building, like you know. So I get in the building, and Danny said, Gaffer wants to see you upstairs. You know, on his first morning, and like Roy was absolutely brilliant with me. Like he came in and he sat in his office and he said, what's going on? And I kind of said, look, I don't really want to get into it. And he said, that's fine. I don't want to talk about it either. He said, whatever's happened, happened. I don't care what's happened. I don't care whose fault it was. It doesn't matter. He said, I want you back in the building. And I said, oh, thank God, Gaffer. He said, I couldn't take much more over there with the 23s, you know, because it was pretty difficult, like, going
so
over there.
That sounds to me like as if you're caught in between transfer windows, so you can't leave the club for a period of time. So it's a case of either the manager goes, as happened there, or you're going to be stuck with the 23s for quite
a while. Oh, I would have been with the 23s for the season, like, you know.
And
I
probably wouldn't. Do the club have the rights to basically say to you, you have to be at the 23 sessions, you have to do this?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, look, man, like, when I first went to the UK, this was like such a strange thing because this happens all the time, by the way. You know what I mean? This happens regularly. Then literally every club in the UK will have this type of situation, a player that wants to leave or a club that wants to get rid of a player, right? Now, how managers deal with it will determine how efficiently and quickly it gets dealt with, like, you know? But when I first went over to Leicester, like, there was always little mini groups of, you know, players, you know, when you see like your contract getting dragged out and the PFA kind of agreements being dragged out and people are going through wording and basically they can have you in from like 9 till 5, you know, and they can have you in for 3 hours on a Saturday and then clubs start saying, well, we want you out and players says, I'm not leaving and then the clubs start enforcing that. So then they start saying players have to be in from 9 till 5 and every player that's been to the UK will know what I'm saying, that there's always some guy at 3:30 doing a running session. And I remember one story when I was a young boy at Leicester and Dave Bassett was the manager. And I think there was three players. There was Junior Lewis, an Icelandic guy, can't remember his name, and a guy called Marshall, can't remember his first name, Lee Marshall. Yeah, right? And the club wanted rid of him, like, and the club had this situation where we're bringing him in from like 9 till 5. The lads were going through the PFA contract, and there's a thing in the contract that said, like, you can't have a training session with less than 4 people, otherwise it's classed as, like, victimisation, because before, clubs would make players run on their own.
You're coming at 4 o'clock, run by yourself.
Pretty much, yeah. So I remember, like, Dave Bassett telling me one day, like, we need to see it like 3:30 today, there's a running session. And I'm like going, huh? And he goes, oh yeah, well we need 4 people and you're the 4th. I was only like 19 at the time and I'm going, well, what have I done? And he went, I'm really sorry, son, but you're running with these 3 lads because I need 4 people and you're the 4th.
You are the legal requirement.
Pretty much, yeah. And I had that for about 2 weeks with them. And the lads were just like laughing. I was running and whatnot. But yeah, that stuff happens all the time, man. It's not a big issue.
Interesting what happens with Mesut Ozil and even Guendouzi, who could well be sold by Arsenal. Still 1-0 to Leipzig, gone over an hour now at this point in this one-off quarter-final between RB Leipzig and Atletico Madrid. We'll take a very short break. We're looking at Spanish football when we come back. We'll be previewing Bayern against Barcelona with Dermot Corrigan from The Athletic.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. A more electric team up than Salah and Mane. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
You're very welcome back to the football show on this Thursday evening. Now, looking ahead to tomorrow, we have got a meeting of two heavyweights in the Champions League. In fact, this year, the only two teams who've previously lifted the trophy that are left in the last eight of the competition. It is Barcelona against Bayern Munich in Lisbon. And also this Sunday, the five-time Europa League winner Sevilla stand in the way of Manchester United reaching the final for the second time in four seasons. To look forward to these games, we're joined by our man in Spain, the Athletic's Dermot Corrigan. Dermot, good evening to you.
Hey, Will, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, this game tomorrow is very interesting, Barcelona against Bayern Munich. Every time that they've played each other in the knockout stages of the Champions League, the winner of the tie has gone on to lift the European Cup. But this time round, I guess different circumstances. We're not looking at a two-legged affair. We're looking at a one-off game in Lisbon tomorrow evening.
Yeah, and a lot of those games have been pretty dramatic with some big hammerings in them from either side. You know, there's been 3-0s, 4-0s. In those games, which took place over the last couple of years, depending on whether Bayern were up or Barca were up at that time. At the minute, it looks coming into the game like this is a time when Bayern are up. You know, they strolled away to the Bundesliga title after the football came back following the break, while Barca had a really bad time overtaken by Real Madrid. And just not the Barcelona that we're used to seeing. You know, Leo Messi's been doing as much as he can to try and pull the team through, but there's a lot of problems throughout the team. There's been a lot of problems off the pitch at the camp now as well, and looked at from here in Madrid and pretty much from Barcelona as well. Bayern are big favourites going into this game.
Yeah, I think there's I'd imagine a real concern among the Catalan media just looking through some of the papers this afternoon that they could well face a hammering once again against Bayern Munich. I'm sure memories are probably still fairly raw about what happened when they were hammered in boat legs in the tie 7 years ago. Obviously, that's not going to happen over a two-legged affair, but with the way Bayern Munich are playing, the way they dispatched Chelsea, I'm watching Barcelona against Napoli, where they coughed up 19 chances for Napoli last Saturday at the Camp Nou. There's every chance that Bayern Munich could rip them to shreds tomorrow.
Yeah, and Barca are well aware of that. Barca coach Quique Setién, who, you know, is only in the job since January, and on arrival talked a lot about, you know, returning the club to the principles of Johan Cruyff and playing beautiful, attractive, attacking football. He's also reined that in a lot over the last couple of weeks. Even against Napoli, there was an acceptance that they weren't going to be able to play their usual style, that they had to be more solid to try and be more compact. You know, as you say, it didn't work out exactly as they'd hoped because Napoli had some chances, but they feel that they have to play more cautiously than before, because if they leave themselves open, if they throw everybody forward against Bayern, they know that considering the players that Bayern have, both, you know, technically very good players, but also very fast, physically good players as well, that they could be in trouble. So Barca will hope to try and keep things as tight as possible. They might even, you know, there's a chance they could leave Antoine Griezmann on the bench, you know, with an extra midfielder in the team to try and keep as compact as they can, look to hold the ball as much as they can, and then hope that Messi can provide enough individual moments of genius to win them the game.
Yeah, the suggestion during the week is they could go four in midfield, given that Sergio Busquets and Arturo Vidal are both back from suspension after missing the Napoli game. They could keep Sergio Roberto in midfield along with Frankie de Jong and play with four players in there and just try and congest it in the middle.
Yeah, that, you know, they've since Setién came in, as I was saying, he's changed things around a lot. At the start, he started playing three at the back, then he had a 4-3-3, but he was always looking to, you know, to get the ball forward, to play nice football, whereas now I think he's realised that Barca's best chance, especially against Bayern, is to play some extra bodies, to look to hold the ball. You know, there's a lot of players in the Barca team now who are into their 30s, a lot of the key men in the team, including Messi, Busquets, that we've talked about there, at the back as well, Gerard Piqué, Jordi Alba, Rakitic, if he plays as well. You know, there's a lot of guys there who are not, maybe think that over 90 minutes they're unlikely to physically match Bayern, especially in the heat, maybe in Portugal as well. And if the game turns into a ding-dong battle, that they would be in trouble. So the idea will be to try to hold the ball. Whether, you know, leaving Griezmann out is going to be a big call for Quique Setién to make, and his relationship with Griezmann, as we've reported on The Athletic before, has not been so good. So, you know, Setién is walking a difficult line as well, because he has to try and deal with the expectations of the fans, of the directors as well, because we still don't know whether, you know, he'll be coach again next season. And also, you know, the egos in the dressing room. So being Barcelona coach is not a difficult, or is not an easy job at the moment, and he has a lot of difficult decisions to make ahead of the game.
I think just on the face of it, from watching the team since lockdown, there's no great reason, with the exception maybe of his performance against Villarreal, when Villarreal were set up in a perfect way for Barca to just attack and counter-attack them. Griezmann hasn't really given any reason to actually be included in a big game.
No, that's fair to say. He hasn't looked pretty happy. You know, just before the lockdown happened, or before the virus hit, he appeared maybe to be having his best run of form for Barcelona. He scored a crucial goal for them at Napoli in the first leg of the Champions League last 16 round, and there was a feeling that maybe he had settled down again. But just because of just has been such a mess at Barca, it's hard to overestimate really just how difficult it's been at Barca over the last few months, between all of the issues at the club during the lockdown and then when they came back, how badly they went off the pitch. And Griezmann, I think maybe Setién has returned back to those guys who know each other really well. You know, Messi, Suarez, Busquets, Piqué, Arturo Vidal as well is another player who could play, who's kind of very close to Messi and Suarez off the pitch as well. And they're kind of hoping to cling to the old core of players, which leaves Griezmann a little bit out of the picture. Like, between Griezmann and Suarez, you could make an argument for either of them. But, you know, Suarez is always going to start if Setién has to choose between the two.
Interesting to see where Leo Messi's mind is at going into this game, because he quite openly was frustrated towards the end of the season, particularly when the title race just fizzled away because of their poor results in games that they should have been winning. And he was saying that their focus wasn't right, they weren't training correctly, they weren't up to the standard they were previously. He seemed very pessimistic about their chances in the Champions League. He had a really good game last week, scored that remarkable goal against Napoli. But you get the feeling that Messi has become extremely frustrated at Barcelona, and even though there's been multiple reports about him potentially leaving the club over the years, it would seem that there's been a real breakdown in relationship from the president right down to Messi. And this is probably, I would think, as close as Messi's ever been about thinking about taking an option elsewhere.
Yeah, like, Messi really has been frustrated. It's something else we've been looking at like over 2 recent months, and from talking to the people around him, that he really feels the most annoying thing for him is that he feels that everybody blames him for when things go wrong, when they don't win a game, or when new players arrive at the club and they don't settle in properly. You know, people point the fingers at Messi, whereas, you know, he says that, you know, he's only responsible for what he does on the pitch, and he's not done a bad job in that, and that others at the pitch, you know, pretty much including the president, you know, if they were doing their jobs better, then, you know, everything would be going better. He did come out after the Osasuna game, you know, the midweek just before the end of the La Liga race, when it was confirmed that Madrid were going to be the winners. He came out and really tore into everybody. He said, you know, look, we all have to have a lot of, to look inward, be self-critical about what's going on. All of us have to look at ourselves. And this has just not been good enough. You know, we've been weak, we've been overcome, we've been lacking in motivation. You know, he really tore into them. Then a couple of days later, the final game of the La Liga season, they hammered Alaves. And he reined back on that. He said, look, this was better. This was a step in the right direction. And now we all have to come together and try as much as we can to win the Champions League, because that's what he really wants. It's been tough. You know, when you're at Messi's level, it's been tough over the last couple of years. Just winning La Liga titles hasn't been enough for him. He's had to watch, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, when he was at Real Madrid, they won 3 in a row since Barcelona last won the Champions League. And if you're the best player in the world, that's your part of your self-image, what you think of yourself. It's super frustrating to not be able to win the Champions League. So whatever he thinks of Bartomeu, or whatever he thinks of Quique Setién and the coach, the idea was to put all that behind us for now, at least focus on the Napoli game as it was. And, you know, he did his part in that game. The other, you know, he was unlucky with the handball decision that went against him that, you know, might have been another brilliant goal. You saw, you know, the incident where he nearly got injured as well when he won the penalty. You know, he was snapping at the defender. He was working hard off the ball, which you don't always see with Messi. But it was, you know, it was so important to him for Barca to go through. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes up with a big performance against Bayern as well. Conversely, if things don't go their way, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, all those fronts open up again, if there's problems with the coach, the president, if everything starts to blow. I don't think he would leave. You know, Barca have presidential elections due in 12 months. It's possible for them to be moved forward. It's more difficult with all that's happening at the moment. But he would like, you know, it's what Messi wants is what everybody would love to know, in, you know, who covers Spanish football. But the idea that we have is that what he would like is for things to change at Barca rather than for him to change club. But as you say, you know, who knows what would happen, you know, if they get hammered on tomorrow night.
Well, Kike Setién, if he does set his team up with two up front and that four in midfield, maybe that might be a way to stop Messi drifting back as deep as he has. He's won the Pichichi again this season in Spain. He got 20 assists. That's a remarkable season. It's a Thierry Henry 2003 kind of numbers in terms of assists and goals. But he has been playing very deep at different times during the season. He's almost tried to be the orchestrator at the same time that you'd like him to be the finisher. I'm sure Kike Setién would like him to be a bit closer to Luis Suarez on the pitch in Lisbon tomorrow evening.
Yeah, as time has gone by at Barca, and as you know, his old teammates and people like Xavi Hernandez and Andres Iniesta have left, and the club haven't been able to provide, you know, replacements on the same kind of level of quality, which is always going to be difficult. But Messi has taken on more and more of the playmaking roles, and as you say, you know, it wasn't that surprising to see him at some stages earlier on in the season, you know, on the ball in the centre circle and all of the opposition team between him and the goal, which, you know, makes it a lot more difficult even for Messi to try and create something. So, you know, his relationship with Setién and whether he does exactly what Setién wants to do is another kind of fascinating one, because especially at Barcelona, the coaches, they all come in with their own ideas, whether it's Luis Enrique or Guardiola, about what to do with Messi. And maybe when he was younger, it was easier, but as he's got older, he has pretty firm ideas about what he wants to do himself, and coaches have learned over the last couple of years that it's better to go along more or less with what he says, that he knows what's going to work, and then you build the rest of the team around him. Maybe that means that Barca are too dependent and that the other players, you know, look too often to Messi, even when they're in good positions themselves, instead of having a shot or trying to play in an opponent, they pass it sideways to Messi and the chance goes. But he's such a dominant figure that even, you know, Setién does pick the team, and I don't think that he sits down with Messi and asks him, well, you know, what's the best 11 to play tomorrow night. But he's trying to second guess what Messi would want, trying to put the conditions in place for Messi to go out and perform as best as they can. And between the two of them, they'll, you know, not exactly talking about it, but between the two of them, they'll come up with a plan that they hope will be able to beat Bayern.
Not even putting Barcelona's issues to the forefront here. If we just take Bayern Munich in and of themselves, Robert Lewandowski's top scorer in the Champions League this season. He's been in remarkable form. Over 50 goals he's scored for Bayern this season. He could well have succeeded Leo Messi as the Ballon d'Or if the competition hadn't been scrapped for this year. And he comes into this game, I would imagine, as a guy who's going to cause an awful lot of problems for Gerard Piqué and Clement Longley. And also, Barca's fullbacks are likely to have a pretty horrid night, given the pace that Bayern are going to have in their team. That Barcelona midfield have got a job on to stop Bayern getting into the final third.
Yeah, for sure. Lewandowski is a guy who's super respected in throughout Spanish football. You know, he's done a job on Real Madrid in the Champions League as well. Scored a hat trick against them a good while ago, and Madrid, you know, came pretty close to signing him at one stage. And he's also done well against Barca in the past. You know, Piqué has maybe had an inconsistent season, but he does tend to come up on the biggest games. Lenglet had a decent game against Roma as well, but as you say, you know, defensively Barca as a structure haven't been great, and their two fullbacks are likely to struggle a lot. There's, you know, whether Davis plays or whoever plays for Bayern, really, that Barca are likely to be in trouble. So, you know, that goes back to what I was saying earlier on, that their hope is to try and keep themselves as compact as possible, not to play the, you know, they're not going to park the bus. It's not going to be like a Mourinho team who go out and have everybody behind the ball the whole time, because Barca know that they can't do that. But they're going to try to modify so that they don't leave it as many spaces for Bayern's wide men to get into, and they try to keep Lewandowski as far away from the goal as they can.
This Bayern Munich team are absolutely relentless too. They had a remarkable finish to the German season. Even when the league was wrapped up, they made sure they didn't drop points, and they took Chelsea apart even after their little break last week, when there was no need to go out against Chelsea in fifth gear because they knew they were already qualified from the first leg, but still ruthlessly dispatched them over the two legs. That's what Bayern Munich bring into this game as well, Dermot. If they come into this and they get ahead, they won't stop against Barcelona.
Yeah, Barca have a, I guess it's what they're saying in public anyway, you know, is that they feel that Bayern haven't been tested as Barca will be able to test them, that they accept that Bayern have, you know, ended up running away with the Bundesliga again, and that they beat Chelsea pretty handily over the two legs. But what they're saying is that we're Barcelona, that, okay, we have had a very inconsistent season, and, you know, we haven't been able to hit the heights that we have in previous years, but we still have a team that's full of these world-class players that maybe are not quite at their best as well, but they have that experience, and they have the innate talent to go and do it. And now they have, you know, this a knockout system, you know, almost like an international tournament. That Griezmann was doing another interview in the press this weekend. He was talking about how that would suit them, that they're players who are used to that format, that Bayern are maybe a little bit less experienced than Barca are. You know, maybe that means that Bayern will have more energy and more physicality, but Barca are hoping that their extra experience in big games, in knockout situations, will count for them. Also, you know, some of the stuff I was just looking at today for the Athletic, you know, Barca have second legs and away legs in Europe in recent years have been such a huge mental problem for them, really. You know, how they collapsed at Anfield last year and Roma the year before, and they were beating out Bayern as well quite heavily in an away game, whereas they think that, okay, that's been our biggest stumbling block over recent years, has been that psychological problem that we have. Whether they're able to put that away and treat the game in a neutral venue as different, we don't know, but it is just going to be very strange and very different and new for everybody involved. So they're hoping that is another thing that brings things back into their favour.
Yeah, Cologne's going to be the venue for a Sunday when Sevilla, winners of the UEFA Cup / Europa League 5 times in the last 20 years, real royalty in that competition, take on Manchester United. Sevilla, Dermot, seem to really relish these Spanish-Anglo clashes. With the exception of Leicester a few years ago, they've got a really good record against English teams, knocked Manchester United out of the Champions League 2 seasons ago, beat Liverpool in a Europa League final. I'm sure Sevilla will be relishing the chance, despite Lopetegui saying they're playing the best team left in the competition. They'll be really looking for a chance to get back into another Europa League final on Sunday.
Yeah, Sevilla, what they do in the Europa League really is amazing, really. It's fantastic. And how they, even against Wolves, you know, the Wolves had defended really, really well, and it was looking like maybe it's going to go to extra time or you know, are the Wolves going to be able to hold out and bring it to penalties. But they found a way to get that winner from a set piece late on in the game. And so often in recent years in the Europa League, it's been that way, that they're able to find a way to win, and against some of the bigger teams as well, where it's Manchester United or Liverpool, as you say, they're almost a problem for them. And their sporting director Monchi has been big on this over the last couple of days, or even before they went out to Germany for the competition, is to try and clamp down a bit on the enthusiasm, because some maybe Sevilla fans more than the players are thinking, you know, we're Sevilla, we can do anything in this competition, it's the Europa League, so we're almost like we should be the favourites to win it, even though, you know, United have spent so much more money than Sevilla. Their players are, you know, their wage bill would dwarf Sevilla's. They have guys like Pogba in the team, you know, who Sevilla could never afford. So Sevilla, in one way, should be outsiders for the game, because, you know, man-to-man, United should have a more talented team or a more expensive team anyway. But because it's Sevilla and because it's the Europa League, you know, I would probably make them favourites for the game.
Leipzig against Atletico Madrid. Since we were chatting to Dermot Corrigan there, Damien, we've had a goal which has been scored by Atletico, won and scored by João Félix, who has come on. Lovely little 1-2 with Costa on the edge of the box. Then Felix gets himself a penalty after being fouled and tucks it away very nicely.
Yeah, like he was through one-on-one right in the middle of the goal. Lovely 1-2 on the edge of the penalty box. The defenders kind of just steamed in more in hope than anything else. I think he pretty much knew he was giving away a penalty, but he obviously only got a yellow card because of that rule change a couple of years ago, and João Félix took it, and what a good penalty it was as well. I mean, the pace on it was brilliant, right in the bottom corner, and it's 1-1, and at the minute the game is just kind of ebbing and flowing, really. There's no one really taking control of it. 86 minutes in, would be surprised if anyone was going to nick it, would be Atletico.
I mean, Atletico have sprung at this stage, Jamie. There are two attacking options. Morata's on, João Félix is on. They've got kind of those fresh legs in attack.
There's a better balance to them. You know, Morata's more centrally, more kind of static up the front, and you've João Félix picking up the bits and pieces in front of him, as opposed to Costa, who's hustling and bustling and running channels and everything. So, look, there's a better feel about Atletico. They have more control of the game here. João Félix is picking up some nice spots. And Atletico, with Kieran Trippier, by the way, should get a mention. He's had a pretty good game, actually, for Atletico.
He's had a decent season since.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a player when the English players, when they go abroad, oh, hang on a minute, chance for goal.
Oh.
Leipzig.
Just at that, and it came down from Kieran Trippier.
Yeah, it did, oh my God, deflected shot from the edge of the box. I can't quite see who's got it.
I don't think Jan Oblak had a whole lot of chance.
No, he didn't. I mean, listen, it was a ball down the side, Kieran Trippier's side, and it was pulled back to the edge of the D. Was it Adams?
It's Adams who scored,
Adams
got a replay of the goal here now.
I mean, listen, a great little ball down the channel in between Kieran Trippier and a centre-back. gets pulled back to the edge of the D, touch out his feet, Adams, and takes a huge deflection.
Oblak saves that if it does take a deflection.
I think it might be going wide, if I'm being honest here. Yeah. Closer to the corner flag than the goal. Well, maybe not that much, but you know, I think it's a huge deflection and goes completely in the opposite direction, to be honest with you. Yeah.
So Tyler Adams with the shot, the American international, just 20 years of age, probably an unlikely hero for RB Leipzig, but they found themselves 2-1 up after 87 minutes. Atletico, having made those attacking substitutions, are going to need to find something in the next 3 minutes. We'll keep watching the game. We'll be back and off the ball in a couple of moments' time.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, as obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Tyler Adams' goal for RB Leipzig has the German first-time quarter-finalists on course at the moment to qualify for a semi-final and potentially to play PSG next week for a place in the Champions League decider. It's a huge deflection, which Jan Oblak had that shot covered, but RB Leipzig have found themselves back in front. Damien Delaney, the only thing is we've been waxing lyrical about Atletico Madrid. Leipzig have played pretty well between the goals that we've seen.
Though. Look, I did say that there's a beauty in what Atletico did. But I'm delighted we won't have to watch him in the semi-final. I'd much rather a PSG-Leipzig final.
This is the man 40 minutes ago who said, I enjoy the defending.
I do. And there is a beauty in it. I just wouldn't want a season ticket at Atletico, and I can pick the bones out of what they do and respect it and admire it, and it is fantastic. But for the football fans out there, Leipzig-PSG is an awful lot more kind of, for a neutral, definitely anyway, more aesthetically pleasing, or it'll be a better game than Atletico and PSG. But look, there's a couple of minutes left here yet, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Atletico pull something out of the bag. They normally have something up their sleeves. But Leipzig have been very good tonight. You know, they stayed in the game brilliantly. They haven't been as free-flowing as what they were in the games we saw previous or in some of the German games, but they've been very, very efficient, very, very solid. Upman Kano, the centre-back for Leipzig, has had the game of his life.
Yeah.
He's been absolutely brilliant, both with possession and without possession. Defending's been fantastic, and his distribution has been equally as good. So a couple of more minutes to go here, and it sets up a fantastic semi-final. PSG will be licking their lips at that. I think they'll be happier having to face Leipzig as well.
I think so too, yeah. Koke has just gone off and they've brought Felipe on to try and just add a bit of width for Atletico Madrid in the closing stages. But we're getting into those last couple of minutes of injury time where Diego Simeone's side need to find a bit of a miracle now to get out of this one. It is Tyler Adams' goal in the 88th minute, which has RB Leipzig ahead. You mentioned, obviously, Damien, this game between PSG and potentially RB Leipzig. It's a dream side of the draw as it worked out in the quarterfinals for these teams, because all the heavyweights really on one side.
Well, you're going to have either PSG or Leipzig in the semi-final, or in the final, sorry, if they come through this, obviously. Last time I was waxing lyrical about Atletico, Leipzig scored, and Atletico will probably score here.
Goalkeeper hasn't covered himself in glory, so Atletico have the ball in the box. I think Leipzig may have done just about enough to get that ball away, and now Atletico Madrid under serious pressure. They are laying siege, and I think they've won themselves a corner, so at this point Jan Oblak might come up.
Yeah, well, maybe, but it'll be nice to see PSG in the final, or Leipzig, either one of those. But I think the winner's probably more than likely going to come from the other side of the draw.
Unless those teams tire each other out, having to play each other in 3-4 day periods on the other side. It's going to be, we were kind of chatting when Dermot Corrigan was on, Damien, about the fact that if Bayern or Barca get through, it's in all likelihood Man City in a semi-final. Mm. And then you'd still have to win a final against probably at this stage Leipzig or PSG. Mm. It's going to be, for whoever comes from that heavy side of the draw, is going to have a very difficult route to the final.
Yeah, maybe, but I think the quality will come through in a final. Tiredness will go out the window, to be honest with you. I think whatever kind of energy sapping games they come through, the adrenaline of being in a European Cup final against potentially PSG or Leipzig or Atletico.
Oh, the ball is faster in the box. Morata could not get anything.
Oh, Morata just hit it with your left foot. Oh. He tried to, in a six-yard box, flick it over the defender's head to get it on his right foot. And I just thought, pull the trigger with your left foot. Oh, that could have been their chance.
Yeah, they're unfortunately, this ball has gone out in the left wing because Kieran Trippier has a long throw. I think it was on the other side. Trippier may have put this directly in. We're into that territory now where Jan Oblak is just hoofing the ball towards the RB Leipzig
from the
box.
Halfway line.
Well, Leipzig have defended that again really well, and I think credit to them. They've pushed Atletico.
Yeah, they've been good. They've been diligent. They've been kind of showed really good character and really good spirit. They haven't wilted. They haven't retreated into their shell. That was the one thing I was kind of going to look for when they went 1-0 up. Would they kind of retreat into their shell? They didn't. They still dominated the ball. They still kind of looked like they were capable of seeing it out. Unfortunately, they got pegged back, but they got their nose in front again. They haven't to go backward step all night.
I think we'll keep an eye on this back. I think that's going to be full time. It was a flick on from Morata. The RB Leipzig goalkeeper came out, and we get this situation now where players have cramp, and this is going to slow everything down. The referee is doing his best to try and speed things up. Atletico, understandably, you're saying add on two more minutes for this. I don't think it's quite 2 minutes that he's been down for, but this is the kind of hopeful bargaining you get with referees. We're about to blow for full time. Just ask you very quickly, Damien, as well. You've been watching a bit of Europa League on the TV with the co-commentaries. We've got Man United Sevilla on Sunday. Do you fancy United to get through? They weren't very good against Copenhagen midweek.
I don't know Man United, and that's just that's kind of. I mean, that's where
you're on record about where they are.
I am. I've named my colours to the mast a long time ago. Sevilla are a very, very good side, possession-based side. It might suit United on counter-attacking if they can turn the ball over with the pace that they have. But Sevilla look a pretty good outfit, you know, a real good experienced outfit at this level. You know, a lot of players have won the Europa League, a couple of Europa Leagues actually. So I don't know going into it, to be honest. I wouldn't say what I need.
I still wonder about United's motivation as well. Then.
Exactly.
2017, this was back to the wall. You've got to get to that final, beat Ajax to qualify for the Champions League. This time around, top four has been secured. Okay, trophy's always nice, but.
It's the way they've been all season. Some good performances, some bad performances, some mediocre performances. Sometimes they look really motivated, sometimes they don't. Martial, depends which one he decides to show up as, whether he wants to have a go at it or not. I don't know with them, to be honest. Yeah, they might win, they might not win. Either which way, I can't see them. I won't say I can't see them winning it, but.
Yeah, look, I mean, they've got the most quality. They've got the team that should be able to win it. We're coming towards the end of the programme. Leipzig have got themselves a free kick, which could be gold dust for them because they've been able to kill another 20, 30 seconds. They flick the ball back to the goalkeeper. It's a long way for Atletico Madrid to try and get back up and attack if they're actually going to get themselves a goal. And Leipzig look like they're just going to play this game out and get themselves a 2-1 victory. Very unlikely semi-finalists when the tournament begun. Many people thought that Tottenham would dump them out and book their place in the quarterfinals, and now we're getting this kind of messy string of exchanges where Atletico Madrid are fighting for every chance on the pitch, and it looks like Leipzig will be more than happy that the game is stopping and starting and then restarting. My thanks to Damien Delaney for joining us on Off the Ball this evening. Don't forget OTBAM, our daily sports breakfast show, is back tomorrow at 7:30. Tomorrow morning the lads are going to be talking about the action at the Crucible. Ronan Mullen will be on to preview Eric Donovan's potentially career-defining fight tomorrow night, and they'll also be looking ahead to the weekend's European football with Jan Aga Fjortoft. We're back at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. Among other things that Ger will be bringing you, they'll be previewing the weekend's racing with jockey Sean Flanagan on Friday Night Racing. He's currently out injured with a broken sternum. Richie will be up for Tom after the news at 10. Good luck.
Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home. Featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.